This cassette is prepared and presented by the Church of God International, sponsor of the Armor of God radio broadcast and telecast.
I want to talk a little bit about our marriages. Our marriages. Especially in light of the event that just took place, some of the words that were said perhaps during that prayer, experience I had last night where I married a couple in their home before I came here last night to Dayton and slept in a hotel. It brings home to mind the importance of marriage, what marriage is all about. How are they doing? What is the condition of our marriages? I want us to think about that. You know, and I think we need to realize that in order to have a happy, vivacious, thriving marriage, it's going to take work, doesn't it? It takes dedication, takes commitment, takes taking lumps, takes taking good times, happy times, great times with the bad times, the down times, the times when things aren't going so well. When times are just kind of really, perhaps, if you had your choice, you wish maybe you weren't where you were with whom you are with. Or maybe you're together, but you're involved in circumstances that, as a result of one or the other, you're involved both, and consequently, you kind of regret, maybe have second thoughts, maybe even wish you weren't with this particular person. Hope not. But the point is, how are our marriages? I mean, if you've been married for any length of time, you know that marriage is not for the faint of heart. You know that marriages certainly are not for the emotionally unstable. They're not. They really aren't. Marriage is a long-term, permanent, physical relationship with very strong, severe, spiritual ramifications, underpinnings, and meanings. Marriage is for adults, not for kids. And yet, sad reality that we have in today's Western culture is so often we find kids not only marrying kids, but kids having kids, don't we? And it's a sad commentary on a society that really has gone haywire in many cases because of standards that are no longer identifiable. My daughter just did a thesis on homosexuality. She got her paper back. She got a very bad grade on it. She got a bad grade on it because in reviewing it and going over it, I find that my daughter was too opinionated and took too of a direct approach on homosexuality because she used Romans chapter 2. And when she said certain statements, there were little crossings and markings and said, considered immoral when she wrote homosexuality is immoral. And then she wrote, as she went through a case study, about two men lovers who adopted a boy named Demetrius, and as she was presenting her arguments in her paper, she presented the conclusion that homosexuality, this relationship and the example that it would establish, would perhaps cause Demetrius, the boy, to be unstable, mixed up, kind of confused in his values, and not normal, parentheses, based on whose standard. Interesting. Our colleges today. Marriage is for adults. Why? Because marriage represents a very important relationship, a God-plane relationship. I want to take a moment out here, brethren, to read something. I read this last night in the marriage as a premise before we went ahead into the vow section. I wanted just to share this with you. Just follow me through this for a moment. Marriage is the apex of all human relationships because it is bound by a covenant promised before God between a man and a woman. Additionally, it is a sacred and a holy institution. Sacred because it is a physical microcosm of God's spiritual relationship with His church. It is a physical microcosm of God's spiritual relationship with His church. Holy because God has sanctified it to represent the ultimate illustration of commitment, dedication, loyalty, and trust to another, equal in value and worth to His own covenant with His church. It is a facsimile on a physical human plane. Very important that we need to realize this because there is immense value in the matrimonial association of two human beings. And there is a much far greater value because of that spiritual tie-in than just going to the justice of the peace and making it legal. There is far more value. God the Father's Son is Jesus Christ our Savior, who is also likened to a bridegroom. He relates to His church as His bride and wife, who is the mother of us all. Tremendous tapestry there, isn't there? Symbology. Family, husband, wife, children, offspring, come from, union, sanctified, holy, Christ, the Father, the church, Christians, impregnated, taken care of in the church, brought to fruition, resurrection and birth. Tremendous, tremendous parallels. Tremendous, tremendous values. The Bible has a lot to say about the comparison and parallels of Christ and His church and the institution of the human matrimonial covenant. However, suffice it to say, marriage and family is significant and important to God, because it is a divine institution which describes and illustrates the method by which He, God, is bringing many sons unto glory. Or in other ways, or in other terms, it represents the method by which God is reproducing Himself. And that's a fact. That is the ultimate aim of God's whole intention of creating mankind. The ultimate objective: bringing many sons unto glory, resurrection, spirit life, to live with Him for all eternity in a kingdom and in a government that has no end. Isaiah chapter 9. There will be no end to this government. No end. It's going to continue to grow and multiply under the leadership of God the Father and Jesus Christ. And we have a part in that right now, an opportunity to be participants in an eternal, eternal program that has no end. And it's our right, our birthright, and our promise, if we would make the step and the commitment to enter into a marriage covenant with our God via baptism. Because baptism is what? The officiating of a covenant. In essence, it's a marriage contract that you are giving yourself up as a living sacrifice to Jesus Christ in the format that He Himself exemplified by virtue of the life that He lived while He walked this earth some 33.5 odd years. Ephesians chapter 5. I'd like to turn there for a moment. And in verse 32, the Apostle Paul, and I'm going to be coming back to this chapter, but I wanted to start at the end. We'll work our way back as we proceed here through the presentation. But in verse 32, Paul states and makes a statement. This is a great mystery, but I speak concerning Christ and the church. And what he's referencing is basically what he had just got done writing through the verses 20 through 31. And as I mentioned before, I don't know if I have down here, but I'll, at the sake of being redundant, mention it again, that essentially Paul uses the illustration of a relationship with a husband and a wife to basically help us understand how a husband and wife should relate? Yes. But as Paul summarizes here or concludes in verse 32, that wasn't his primary goal. His primary goal was, this is a great mystery, but I speak concerning Christ and the church. he was using the example of husband and wife relating to themselves to illustrate the physical analogy so we could better understand how Christ interacts with the spiritual organism called the church. And the relationship between the two, the interaction, the interfacing, the integrating of that type of approach is symbolized in the format of a husband and wife. It's a beautiful analogy, and it's right staring us in the face, and most of the world doesn't recognize it. It's amazing. It's amazing. Every day in our lives, we're faced with it. We see it. It's an institution. It's an abstract, yes. It's the very truth, the very structure, the very revealing ingredients of how God is interacting with humankind to bring sons into an open door or a window into eternity. And what do we have? We have a world that basically comes along and states essentially that you got to be single. You got to have a fast car. You got to have a good-looking chick. Man, you got to smell right and look right. I'll tell you, you got to have bread in your pocket and name-brand jeans. And you look all over the place, and that's what you've got. You've got on TV and on radio and on talk shows, on Araldo and Oprah and Donahue. You've got weirdos and guys that are off on the left and women that are above and below. I mean, it is crazy when you start turning into these things and seeing the values of what is going on, the perceptions that this world, and unfortunately is fast becoming in the majority, of their opinion about marriage. Homosexuality is not homosexuality, it's alternative lifestyles. Alternative lifestyles. Well, yeah, it's an alternative lifestyle, all right. But it is unnatural, and it is immoral, and it's not right. By whose standard? The standard. But the problem is, the world is not using, in the vast majority, this particular standard. So what we have is basically a world and a media that in general does not promote the values or virtues of family life, does not promote the values and virtues of marriage. As a matter of fact, it's quite counterproductive. It's quite oriented toward tearing that value system down. Quite oriented and determined, dedicated and committed to a very liberal media of poo-pooing it by comparison to riding around in Porsches and being single and getting, like I say, fast cars, big jobs, and basically focusing on me. Mine. And it's a shame. And it's something, brethren, that we need to realize over here in Ephesians again. Chapter 5 and in verse 12. Put perhaps some of it in perspective. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness, or better translated, wicked spirits in high places. Jesus Christ saw Satan the devil literally fall from heaven like a lightning bolt. He himself mentioned that. He himself knows firsthand, because he was confronted one-on-one by this archdemon, who is alive and doing well on this planet in terms of keeping things somewhat camouflaged and diffused. And one of his strategies, and we need to understand this, brother, one of his strategies in eradicating all ties and connection with what God is doing is to eradicate, obliterate, and destroy, minimize, and pervert the value of family. Of family. Why? Because he knows that if he can get human beings to transfer their values and their attentions into areas that are to the left or to the far right, or if anything, in opposite of what the truth that is contained in the marriage and sanctity of the institution is, he knows that he can continue to camouflage and misdirect and diffuse the truth that is contained in marriage. If we could understand the truth of what marriage is, which I've shared with you a little bit at the onset of this presentation, we would understand what God is doing. God says he's a family. And here's my point. The world says he's a trinity. God says man cleaves unto his wife. The world says man to cleave unto his man. Woman cleave unto his woman. Or man cleave unto his girlfriend. Or as many as he can handle, or that she can handle. And why get married? Let's live together. Let's try it out. Let's window shop. I mean, if it doesn't work out, nothing gained, you know, nothing ventured, nothing gained. I don't want to make commitments. I don't want to really dedicate anything. We can keep this loose. We'll split everything down the middle. We'll share rent, share food. That's your stereo. That's my speaker, and that's your speaker, you know. This is my tape. That's my tape. If we split up, we'll just split it up. I'll put my initials on this, and you put your initials on that. Yeah, it sounds good to me. We'll go ahead and do that. And why not? When you talk with someone who has a different standard or value, how can you argue? You can't. You really can't. But for us, brother, who know better, it's important and it's expedient to understand the value of marriage, because marriage has tremendous value. There's a very liberal effort going on to continue to destroy, minimize, pervert, and devalue the importance of the sanctity of marriage. Sex out of wedlock is flat out immoral. See, it's that simple. It is that simple. Sex with the same sex is wrong. That simple. Sex with animals is wrong. I mean, these are basic, fundamental moral issues that, believe it or not, people are confused on. We may sit here in our understanding and say, Bill, why are you saying this? Where are you going? What's your topic about? Why are you bringing these things into your presentation? But after reading my daughter's correction and seeing all the work she put into that and handling the approach and doing her bibliographies and all of that, only to have it handled like that, I wonder where he's at. But I know where he's at. And it certainly isn't here. And it's a shame, brother. And it's a fact, and we need to realize it. And we as Christian people involved either in marriage or contemplating marriage, or maybe going in our marriage and having some problems, it's important to realize our marriages are worth working with. And it's important to realize marriages are worth going for. It's right to get married. It's okay. It's great. It's good. It's wonderful. God is pleased with marriage. God loves to see human beings get married. Why? Because when God sees that, what does he see? He sees Christ and the church. He sees a man and a woman. Symbolically, he sees Christ and his church, man and woman. We're going to go through some of those scriptures and show that illustration, show that symbology. It's important for us to realize that. Sometimes, and certainly, it happens, and it can happen to all of us, because there are so many pressures, external and internal, for that matter, that tear the very fiber of our marriages. That divorce, separation, may be the only alternative. And there are times when that is definitely an alternative, unfortunately, and sometimes, in some cases, the only alternative. But it's certainly not what God wants. It's certainly not the norm. It's not correct. By all means, it can be avoided and stopped. It should be tried in every way, shape, or form until all options are exhausted. In other words, brethren, we should fight to maintain our marriages, no matter how bad they may be, if they are bad at all. Hopefully they're not. but we should stand strong, supportive of our relationships and our marriages and our children, because it all means so much. It really does, because of the strong spiritual ties of the meaning behind the institution of what marriage is. But it happens. Well, what can we do? What can we do to help guard our marriages? What can we do, perhaps, to help further disallow for marital problems? Is there anything that perhaps we can do that would better assure us of marital bliss and success? Are there some things that we can perhaps do? Well, there are. There are certain basic underpinnings and principles that we can adhere to and certainly discuss, and which I'd like to bring out and share with all of you today, this afternoon. But first, before I go ahead and do that, I want to take a little survey. So get on your thinking caps. It's a silent survey, by the way. It's called the Intimate of Heart Survey. And I want to share these questions with you, just a few questions here. You answer them in your heart, or maybe even answer them with your mate there, if you're sitting there with your mate. And if not, if you're contemplating marriage, or maybe perhaps have been through a marriage and are thinking of maybe another marriage sometime in the future, certainly keep these questions in mind. This is the Intimate of Heart Survey. Question one. Do you feel you can express anything to your mate without reservation? Answer that in your heart. Anything. Can you ask for things you want without arguing? Remember, I said want, not need. Want. And there is a difference. Are you open with each other about likes and dislikes? Are you open with each other about likes and dislikes? Can you express yourself without fear of being misunderstood? Can you express yourself without fear of being misunderstood? Can you communicate without being defensive? Can you communicate with each other without being defensive? Can you discuss anything? It's kind of redundant, but perhaps I am putting it this way. Or are you selective in your choice of subjects? Are you at ease and relaxed with each other? Do you feel at ease and relaxed with each other? In other words, are you good therapies for one another? Do you laugh together? Or do you laugh at each other? It's different. Can you laugh together? Or do you laugh at each other? Do you enjoy each other? Do you really enjoy each other? Do we hide or mislead each other? Or in other words, as Mr. Ron Dart has kind of coined the term, do we suffer from fig leaf syndrome? Spiritually speaking, are we hiding something? We shouldn't. My point being here, though, in this particular survey, that if there are approximately three or more negative answers to any one of those questions, there could be a storm brewing. There could be a storm brewing. So you want to be aware of it. Because it's important, brethren, that we nip things in the bud, as they say. It's important that we have good, open communications with our mates. It's good that we do draw close to one another, using certainly Christ and the church as the overriding example. There's one thing that we need to realize about marriage, and over here in 1 Corinthians, I'd like to turn there for a moment, chapter 7. Paul goes through an array of conditions regarding marriage and Christians, and he's beginning basically to address unconverted mates or baptized individuals living with, married to, mates that are not necessarily sharing the same faith. But he points out something very important here, be that the situation or not, and that's really not what I want to focus on here. What I want to focus on, though, is located right here in verse 15 as he begins to discuss this split situation where an individual who doesn't share the same faith is living with someone who has the faith, and this individual who does not share the faith leaves. verse 15. But if the unbelieving depart, let him depart. A brother or a sister is not under bondage in such cases. And that's an issue in itself. Here's what I want to focus on, though, this last part of this scripture. But God has called us unto peace. And that's the point. Our marriages should be peaceful. They should be vibrant. They should be environments that are conducive for positive reinforcement, for personality growth, for maximizing our own abilities with each other, using each other to help each other to become more stable, more fond of life, enjoy life more, enjoy it to the fullest, because you've got someone that you can enjoy it with intimately. Intimately. I mean, guys have guy friends, girls have girlfriends. I mean that in a healthy sense. But there's an intimacy, or at least there should be, an intimacy with a wife and a husband that is unlike anything that you could ever even imagine or think of having with a secretary or with a co-worker or with a guy friend or a girlfriend, if you know what I'm saying. And I mean those things in a healthy fashion. Your wife, your mate, should certainly, both of you, be working together to develop a peaceful environment, an environment, as I say, that is conducive for the maximizing of your enjoyment of this physical life. And obviously the natural outgrowth of that is certainly stable, well-balanced, wholesome children who would be brought up under stable, wholesome, mentally balanced parents who have values that will establish a certain standard and point of view that will be related to God. And hopefully, if you train them when they're young, even though perhaps as they get older there's a tendency to seem to want to drift somewhere out, that hope is that they'll always have that information in the reservoir of their brains, and somewhere, somehow, it'll come percolating back forward to where it'll mean something maybe later on when their lives begin to intensify a little bit with more responsibility. But the point is, we need to understand that 90% of solving our marital problems, as I ran through this little survey, is to recognize first that we perhaps have them, or potentially could have them. But we need to identify them, and then we need to address them. 90% of solving our marital problems is identifying the problem. Once we've got the problem identified, hopefully depending on what the problem might be, it becomes quite obvious maybe what action needs to be taken. But the point is here, we need to identify them. There are two broad underpinnings of successful marriages in identifying problems. And you'll see what I'm talking about here in a moment, because a non-participating marriage will identify them and not do anything about it, thereby reducing their chances of success in saving and salvaging the marriage, let alone obviously remedying the problems. So a participating, which is the second broad category, marriage, or proactive marriage, one that is enthused and interested in each other equally, is the kind of marriage, brother, we should want and have and strive to obtain and work toward. Otherwise, it's obvious that we won't have as much success and we won't have as much happiness, and as a result, we won't have the opportunity to secure the marriages the way we should. So what I'd like to do, I'd like to share with you four points, basically, four pins to hopefully help us to maybe understand how to interact a little bit with one another to hopefully, if we have an intimate, highly communicative, proactive relationship, we can maintain it. And if we don't, maybe we can work a little bit back toward it as we begin to understand perhaps these four points. Point number one, realize our roles and recognize our relationship to each other. I want to go over here to 1 Peter for a moment. 1 Peter chapter 3. Recognize our roles and recognize, or realize our roles and recognize our relationship to each other. Chapter 3, 1 Peter, verse 1. Likewise, you wives, be in subjection to your own husbands, that if any obey not the word, they also may without the word be won by the conduct of the wives. Let that sink in. While they behold your chaste conduct coupled with fear, whose adorning, let it not be that outward adorning of plaiting the hair and of wearing of gold or of putting on of apparel, but let it be the hidden man of the heart in that which is not corruptible, even the ornament of a meek and quiet spirit, which is in the sight of God of great price. For after this manner, in the old time, the holy women also who trusted in God adorned themselves, being in subjection unto their own husbands, even as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters you are, as long as you do well and are not afraid with any amazement. I want to support something over here with Ephesians chapter 5. Let's go over there for a moment. Ephesians chapter 5, along the same theme, but beginning to expand here a little bit. Because I want to identify the roles in general. And then we'll discuss the interaction here in a moment. Ephesians 5, and in verse 22, wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands, as unto the Lord. For the husband, here comes the symbology now, is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church. And right away we start conjuring up, authority. Authority, see? I'm the boss, and I've got the calls here. This is my job. It's God ordained. See, I've got license. But just hold back here for a minute. Let's just follow me through this. Therefore, as the church is subject unto Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything. And here's a qualifier. Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church. Big qualifier. Is that how Christ's attitude is? Mm-mm. Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ loves the church. How does Christ love the church? We need to answer that. How does he love the church? Get detailed. Mentioned that last week a little bit about women and the subject about women. And it's important that we take that to heart and understand that there is tremendous, tremendous responsibility on the male's part in the marriage relationship to give his very life for her, the church, in symbol. And what I meant was, like last week when I said, remember, oh yeah, I can give my life away, and I don't want to be too redundant here, but as you remember when I said, oh yeah, I'll die for my wife. If she fell in an alligator pit over in Florida, sure, I'd jump in. I'd whip those old alligators, you know. No, let's talk about a job. How about supporting the children? How about maybe sacrificing for that whatever for her because she needs something? I mean, day-to-day things, guys. And that's what I was talking about the other day. Even as Christ loves the church, it's far from, you will do this, and I will do that. Far from that, totally. First Corinthians chapter 11 and verse 3. Paul again, basically talking about another subject, but as he unfolds the subject, he touches some other very interesting spots which are very conducive to our subject matter here. And in verse 3, one of those spots are located as such. But I would have you know that the head of every man is Christ, and the head of the woman is the man, and the head of Christ is God. So you have God, the head of Christ, Christ, the head of man, the head of the woman. And basically there's a formation there, a role identity. It's a role identity. And marriage is the symbol of the very role that God the Father has with Christ, who has a relationship with his wife or bride, the church, who also is bringing children. We're impregnating them with God's Spirit, preserving them in the womb of the church for a future birth as the sons of God upon the return of the bridegroom. It's tremendous, tremendous meaning there, tremendous truth. And it's right in the face of the whole world, but much brethren of the world doesn't recognize it, and your eyes are blessed. You see it. You see it. You understand it. That's a miracle. That is a miracle, not to be devaluated or to be demised in any way. because this world and the vast majority doesn't understand it. Verse 8, for the man is not of the woman, but the woman of the man. Neither was the man created for the woman, but the woman for the man. So, making no apologies, there is government in the family. There is a structure in the family. That's just the way it is. There is structure, there is government, and rightly so, because it represents a facsimile of Christ in the church. It's that simple. The husband should take the lead, but not by harsh, insensitive dominance. And it should be much of a partnership. An individual who is dominant and harsh is not playing the role of the qualifier. Remember the qualifying statement? How Christ loves the church. And how does Christ love the church? That's what we need to identify with. We need to study that so that we can better identify how we as husbands and as wives can relate to one another. A husband will relate to a wife out of sincere concern and dedicated, very dedicated, to her comfort and to the children's comfort, and must be prepared, even at the expense of his own convenience, to be inconvenienced, if for the whole it's the best. That's part of the territory. That's part of it. I mean, that just comes with the territory. And providing, of course, a right example of selflessness. Doing those jobs that are mutually agreed upon. And there was a comment about, about the concept of men perhaps having the responsibility of doing things outside, ladies having the responsibility of doing things inside. Well, I don't want to burst any bubbles, but I do dishes. I mean, it just happens. I mean, that's the way it is. Because on occasion, she's doing this or that or the other thing, and so you pitch in, you try and help out a little bit. Save her some time, or I'm a good one for this, I delegate it to my two teenage daughters and get it done that way perhaps. But be that as it may, the point being that we need to realize that it is a partnership. Yes, there must be respect for each other's role. Absolutely. We need to recognize that. And then to respect and recognize the differences there. However, we should realize that the wife, though she should reciprocate, and I want to say this, ladies, to you in a fashion that I hope I don't say it wrong, but that she should reciprocate in a cooperative spirit, in a reconciling fashion. But that's not to say you need to be some kind of an airhead without your own opinion. You do have a right to your opinion. And you do have a right to make statements of evaluating, assessing certain circumstances. However, what we need to do is realize that there are ways of being able to disagree without being disagreeable. And that brings me to my second point. Second point being that we need to mutually respect the differences of each other's roles. We need to mutually respect the differences of each other's roles. The avenue to disagree without becoming disagreeable, or better yet, compromise without oppression, is another way of saying it, can be and should be possible. But the husbands need to realize that yes, though they have the authority of perhaps making a decision, that doesn't give them license to oppress. And there's a big difference. There's a big difference. Being the head of a household is not synonymous with being an oppressive pighead. I mean, there is a reality here, the qualifier of Christ in the church. And that's how the husband should relate. And then the wife reciprocating as the church does to Christ, being responsive and reconciling, and certainly with peace in mind and an underpinning of reconciliation as the motivating overall factor. But always realizing, too, that though the husband may have to be firm, though he may have to say no on occasion, the point still is that with due consideration and the whole in mind, there should be some method, some place, some way to work it out, some middle ground. Be it either delaying the want of the one or a happy medium between whatever it may be. I mean, people have gotten divorces over not being able to agree where to go on vacation. I mean, that's a fact. I mean, that's how sometimes it gets to be. And it shouldn't be that way. If we understand that the whole objective is that we have peace, and the whole objective is to be in a permanent relationship, dedicated and committed to one another, as, qualifier, as Christ is to the church. Was Christ just on a one-night stand with his church? That's almost blasphemous. And you can begin to see by comparison, by that even statement, how obnoxious and atrocious that kind of interacting with human beings, when you elevate the relationship of females and males on the God plane, is with ones who just don't see any importance. They hop in bed, they hop out of bed, they hop here, they hop there. They try this, they try that. They do it with him, they do it with her. He does it with him, she does it with her. They do this, they do that. Then they want to adopt and add more confusion to others. And it happens. It's happening right now as we sit and speak. It's the culture we live in. It's the reality we're dealing with. Over here in 1 Peter, I want to point something out. We read it before. But in 1 Peter chapter 3, going back there for a moment, perhaps we just gloss over this and I just wanted to go back to it. Verse 6, I read before, even as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord. Sarah called Abraham Lord, whose daughters you are, as long as you do well and are not afraid with any amazement. Point is, Sarah did this not because she had to. She did this because she wanted to. Consequently, what I'm saying is Abraham generated that kind of response. Important to recognize. Important to recognize. Ladies have no problem, and perhaps I'm being presumptuous on this, but I've been married for 20 years. Not a lot by comparison to some, but I've got two daughters, and every time I go to the feast, I take four women with me. My mother-in-law and her lady friend, I'm always surrounded by ladies, it seems. My uncle's got seven daughters, and I've got two daughters and no sons either. But my point being that I think I can go on record as saying that ladies have no problem in respecting men who are deserving of that and who consider certain sensitivities and are in touch with certain feelings and will at least bend and show concern and interest, even if it's only talking about the kids in the diaper. Or even if it's just talking about, well, the gas man was here, and guess what? And you just came off of a who knows what at work, or something in your mind is just awesome by comparison, and she's when you get home. And all you want to do is kind of crawl under the chair with a good newspaper and shut the door somewhere in the back room of the house. And that's not fair to her. That's not fair to her. Because she has feelings too, and she rates. But then also, the reciprocal sensitivity goes both ways, to where if someone, a man, comes home from work, assuming the role is the ladies at home, and the man comes home and he is in an attitude, then ladies, objective, peace, reconciliation, those are the underpinnings. What's the objective? Make him comfortable. Do what needs to be done in order to get off on a good start and to pick up where each other has been all day, because you've been here, he's been there, now you're coming together at home. And you're coming from two different environments with two different pressures, and you've seen all kinds of circumstances impacting one another, and each of you have different temperaments to begin with anyway. If nothing else, one's female, one's male, so that makes it different right off the bat.
That concludes the recording of Side A. Please flip over now to Side B to continue listening.
And the point being, it takes some time. It takes some work. It takes some adjustment. It takes give and take on both sides of the pendulum. But the point is how does Christ relate to the church? Keep that in mind. I want to hammer this home so we understand the value of marriage. It's very valuable because it is a facsimile of Christ in the church. And if we get confused on how to relate to one another, go right back to the basics. How does Christ relate to the church? Those are my roles. That's the identity in the matrimonial relationship of two human beings. And when we begin to understand and recognize the importance of that, we'll never lose sight of that ground zero if we just keep coming back to that. But the point here again is, and what I'm trying to drive home to illustrate in this case, is that essentially here, in this case, Sarah obeyed Abraham calling him Lord because Abraham was that kind of a guy. He was that kind of a guy. Over back to Ephesians for a moment. As I said, just going to kind of bounce back and forth here for a moment. Chapter 20, or chapter 5 and verse 25, picking up where we left off. Ephesians 5, verse 25. Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it, that he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word, that he might present it to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing. Now we're getting into some details here. Husbands loving their wives and taking care of them so much that if need be, she even looks better than you. I mean, are we willing to make those kinds of commitments? Are we willing to give that kind of breadth and scope? Because it's important we understand that if need be, that's what needs to be done. Not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that it should be holy and without blemish. So ought men to love their wives, now here's a good qualifier, as their own bodies. Love their wives as their own bodies. That's how much you should love your wife. He that loves his wife loves himself. So that's an automatic. So if you love your wife as your own body, that's an illustration of you loving yourself. So if you're ever in doubt about loving yourself, look at how much you're loving your wife. Because that's the reverse or the inverse of it. For no man ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, even as the Lord does the church. Loving one's wife is a very personal relationship. It's a very intimate relationship. It's something that basically is essentially exclusive, special to you too, and your particular personalities. But we need to recognize that regardless of who we are, if we're married to one another, marriage is in fact a partnership. It's a partnership. It's a combined effort. It's not just a one-way street. It's a two-way street. And it's dedicated for the good of each other. Co-heirs, equal to the call of salvation. Both equal in potential. As I mentioned last week, ladies, you're going to be resurrected. Salvation is promised to females also. That's important we understand that. Sounds basic, but yet nevertheless it's important in the overall value comprehension of the marriage also. In interacting, because we as men need to realize that females are not something to step on, not something to abuse, be it physically or emotionally or psychologically. And there are those types of abuses too. And it's important we understand the value of that so that we can essentially, mutually together, with tender-heartedness, forgiveness and mercy, working together in that regard, giving space to each other so that we can patiently cope with each other's mutual weaknesses and consequently meekly encourage one another. Mutual appreciation. And that brings me, essentially, to point three, because that's not going to happen unless you generate trust with each other. You've got to have trust with each other. And that trust needs to be built on truth. If you're truthful with one another, the automatic outgrowth of that will be trust. You'll have trust, but you have to base it on truth. Without truth, there is no trust. If you're constantly doubting and second-guessing, surmising, questioning, suspecting, whatever, it's going to be hard to trust. And if it's hard to trust, it's going to be hard to be intimate. If it's hard to be intimate, it's hard going to be to have a successful, strong, vibrant, proactive marriage that is mutually beneficial for both and or children if they're involved as well. Each is dependent on the other, and it's a major, that is, trust, is a major element or nutrient of cohesion to a marriage. Because trust is a very, very important element of love. It really is. Frankness with affection. Being open with each other, I mean, if you love her, don't just tell her, show her. Bring her flowers, simple little things. Take her out. Say, hey, we're not going to have you cook tonight. I'm going to give you a break. Let's go out. Maybe make her a bubble bath. I mean, simple things that go so far. Little things. What, for me? I mean, she'll be shocked. She'll faint. You'll probably have to put her into the bathtub because she won't know what happened. Make her breakfast on Sunday morning or Sabbath morning. Her. Make her breakfast. She's still sleeping. You come up with a tray. This kind of thing. You can have fun doing this. You really can have fun doing this. But so often over the long haul, he'll be there. She'll be there all the time. Yeah, she'll be home when I get home. And I'll be home when I get there, you know. And you tend to take each other for granted over a period of time. And lo and behold, what happens? You start saying, well, of course I love you. Don't I take the garbage out? You know, and true. I mean, true, that says I love you in many ways because you're doing something for each other. And if we put value to that and that statement to the things that we do, certainly there is value in continuing to do things for each other. But it does take more than that. It does take more than that. And of course, if you love him, encourage him. Reinforce him. When he comes home, oh no, you're depressed again? Oh, I can't stand this. I'm going out. You walk home, and there you are in the living room, and she's going out the door in the car. And you're deserted there. You stand there with your two cats and wondering what's going on. But the point being, if you, that is, ladies, really love him, be there for him. Sometimes you don't really need any opinions, you know. Sometimes you just need somebody to hear you. Somebody to just listen to what you have to say and to share some of the frustrations, be it on the job, be it on the freeway coming home, be it down at the grocery market, be it with the children, be it with the school, be it with the tax man or wherever, whatever it might be. Sometimes it's just sitting down and saying, boy, am I just frustrated? I'll get up. And the simple statement, well, what's wrong? And then sit back and listen. Well, I'll let me tell you. Because that's a lot of times, as simple as it is, works wonders for bonding, which is also important. We need to learn to communicate, brethren, with each other. Communication is cohesion. And that cohesion, obviously, the communication has to be based on trust. The ultimate aim, of course, is peace, as I said, and using truth, the natural outgrowth would be trust. And then consequently, bringing communications in brings me to the fourth point, and that is when you do communicate for friendship. Don't just communicate. Did you pay the bills? Did you get the paper? We don't need bread. Who's going to get the milk? The car's empty again. I mean, that's communication. You know, that's communication. Oh boy, I don't know, I'm too busy. I gotta go here, I gotta go there. Well, you're gone, you know. That's communication. There's a lot of communication. You're reading the paper. Honey, what do you want for dinner? I don't know anything. Well, I thought I'd make that sound good. Boy, did you see this? Why, Bush is going to put another 100,000 troops in the Middle East. Honey, did you say potatoes? And it happens. That's communication, but nobody's listening. You both have two different agendas. She's talking about potatoes, he's talking about the Middle East, he's reading the paper, watching the news, and she's talking to him about the car that broke down. And nothing's happening. And it happens to all of us, doesn't it? From time to time, we go in and out of these things, and before you know it, we get a little bit too busy, and sometimes, and this is where it gets into a problem, it gets away from us, and a year goes by, and 2 years go by, and you're still doing this, and then lo and behold, decisions have to be made, things come up, children get in trouble, whatever it may be, and guess what? There's no partnership. Guess what? You haven't been communicating, and there's no meeting of the minds, and there's no way in the world you're going to learn to be able to mutually compromise because you've lost sight of each other's role and the mutual respect and the trust because neither one of you have been communicating for all that time, and therefore you're two basically separate individuals living in one house, sharing a bed, but really not together. Marriage, brother, is something that is like a garden that needs participation. We need to be proactive. We need to really care about our marriages. We need to really try and do what we can to make them continue to be vibrant, wholesome, active units based on concern and trust and mutual respect and all those things that promote good, wholesome outlooks for ourselves as well as our children. And it all goes back, basically, to developing, as I mentioned here, communicating for friendship. As pointed out in the sermonette, offenses are going to come. We're busy people. Things happen. Sometimes things get on you so much, you end up getting short, perhaps, from time to time with one another. Offenses will come. However, we need to develop, I call them, conflict resolution skills. It's important that we do understand that, because the reality of marriage is offenses will happen. Conflicts will occur. And any of you who have been married for any length of time know what I'm talking about. Arguments happen in marriages. It's not all Hollywood. And consequently, we have to be dedicated to resolving conflicts, conflict resolution skills. Committed to that, resolving our conflicts. And making a dedicated effort, committing our energies to saying, okay, we got a problem, now let's work it out. And find some kind of middle ground to put together some kind of action plan to resolve the issue, be it the choice of a college, be it moving, be it the decision on a job, be it perhaps some marital problem. But the point is that we need to develop those particular types of skills. And what am I talking about? Three proverbs come to my mind, and I will forego giving you the scriptures. That way you can look them up. But one, of course, is a soft answer turns away wrath. That's a conflict resolution skill. Being able to discipline your own temper, even when she or he is screaming at you, if in fact that occurs. And being able to counter that with, well, I'm sorry. I didn't realize you felt that way. Let me explain to you my point of view on this, because this is where I'm coming from. And being able to do that, a soft answer turns away wrath. A fit word is honey to the bones. A fit word is honey to the bones. I can't believe it. I had this happen to me at work, and I can't believe that guy is this way and this and that and the other thing. And now it's your turn, and you say, well, you wanted to hear what happened to me today? No. No. No, no, no. What you say is, oh, well, what happened? Let's sit down and talk about it. That's a fit word. That's honey to the bone. Because you're all keyed up with, for me or whatever, or maybe it's she, and you respond that way. Being sensitive to one another and being willing to give to support, reinforce, and help and serve, even in our own marriages. Even in our own marriages. And that's important. The third one, do unto others as you'd want them to do unto you. The golden rule. These are simple underpinning bylaws, brethren, that in our marriages are so very, very important. Contentions are very counterproductive. I want to read a few proverbs real quickly here. Not a whole lot, but just a few. Turn with me to Proverbs 19. And in verse 13 we read, a foolish son is the calamity of his father, and the contentions of a wife are a continual dropping. Important for us to understand that. There's a lot of meat in that scripture in terms of child rearing as well as interpersonal relationships with a mate. Because the reverse is just as bad. The contentions of a husband, I'm sure from the lady's point of view, is just as continual and it's dropping as this portrays from the female's point of view, or from the male's point of view, that is. Proverbs 27 and verse 15. A continual dropping in a very rainy day and a contentious woman are alike. Proverbs 21 and in verse 19. It is better to dwell in the wilderness than with a contentious and angry, and I'm just going to say mate, be it woman or man, because feeling, I'm sure, is mutual. In Proverbs 12, verse 14. Proverbs 12 and in verse 14. A man shall be satisfied with good by the fruit of his mouth, and the recompense of a man's hand shall be rendered unto him. meaning that it's very important to put your heart and soul into what you're going to do. It's very important that you are active, that you are doing those things that are very, very important. Remember that you married your mate not for her or his body, money, cars, clothes, position, location. You married a mind and a personality. You married someone who you made a commitment at some point to say, I would like to spend the rest of my life with this personality, with this person, with this lovely human being, be it he or a she. That's what you married for. That was the underlying reason. If you married for something else, then you better get to work and start making some adjustments, because it's important. It really is important that you learn to appreciate the value of each other for what each other has to offer to each other. Because marriage, again, is a partnership, and you're working together to develop strength and maximize each other's potential for the benefit of each other as well as the benefit of your children. And your children should certainly be beneficiaries of that. So when we say communicate for friendship with the objective in mind, totally, of peace. And in conclusion, realize point number one, our roles. Recognize our relationship to each other. Point number two, mutually respect each other's role and differences. So the first one is realize the roles and recognize the relationship to each other. There is government in the family. There is structure in the home. But then point two, mutually respect those roles, respect that government, and attempt to do the best we can, knowing the relationship and interaction, bylaws and guidelines of Christ and the church being our example, how to work mutually respectful within that structure. Three, develop trust, obviously based on being truthful. That's a premise of trust, being truthful with each other. And four, communicate for friendship. Communicate for friendship. And couple all that with the philosophy, with an attitude of being proactive, being participatory. Keep that as your underpinning approach towards your marriage. Like, roll up your sleeves and get ready, because you're in this for the long haul. And it's going to be fun. We heard today a speech about attitude. About attitude. And it's important we have a good, positive attitude toward it. It's going to be fun. It's your choice. You pick that person. And now, consequently, you guys have made a commitment. And therefore, as Christ is committed to the church, so you should be committed in similitude to your mate. And if God is for you, who, brother, can be against you?
Thank you for listening to this cassette tape of the Church of God International. Feel free to contact us with any additional literature or tape request at Post Office Box 2525, Tyler, Texas 75710, or call 903-825-2525, or email us at armorofgod@email.com. Thank you.